Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning.
In El Paso are veterans of those campaigns. And the folks at the Las Vegas Clinic will continue, or Las Cruces Clinic will continue to be on primary care, mental health care, telehealth, and improving efficiencies in those areas. So, which is good. You know, it's the less that these veterans have to travel, and that's an 80-mile round trip or more, certainly, then that's good. Okay. Northbound lanes of Roadrunner Parkway from Stellar Way to Cheyenne Drive will be closed for about 3 weeks, beginning 7 a.m. Monday, April the 13th, for asphalt paving operations. So two-way traffic will be maintained in the southbound lanes, and detour routes will be put in place. Just to let you know, the cop that shot the other cop down at the hotel, he is arguing that it was self-defense. So we'll keep you posted on that one. And then we've got the $6.2 billion budget from Susana Martinez, and it does boost spending for education, child welfare, public safety, and economic development. And so, you know, one of the real issues now is the price of oil. And the price of oil anybody who's got their ears on at all knows that oil has plummeted. Now, it had been around $100 a barrel or so, and as American production came online and we became the biggest producer last year of oil and gas, and I tried to keep you up on that, then what happened was, as Saudi Arabia saw what was going on, they decided to open the spigot. Production from Saudi Arabia is as high as it's ever been. Now, you've got the oil price going down. You see around town, it could be around $2, $2.10, $2.20. It was under $2 yesterday or the day before. But you heard Steve Pierce say it could go down to $30 a barrel, could go down to $20 a barrel. When oil is cheap, the last time oil was super cheap, it was around $20 a barrel. Now, there's a couple of other factors here, one of which is if Iran comes back off of these sanctions, then that's going to be millions more of barrels a day. In addition to that, it was just announced that about 2 kilometers away from Gatwick Airport in the UK, in the England, United Kingdom, there was a discovery of about 100 billion barrels, which is a major find. It's the biggest find in the United Kingdom in the last 30 years. And it's the amazing thing. I think it was on Horsehead Hill or something like that, some kind of memorable name over there. And I saw this interview with the head of the oil company, and they immediately jumped on him about fracking. And he said, we're not going to be fracking. There's no reason to frack. It's just immediately below the surface. I think it's down 2,000 or 3,000 feet. So it's just kind of a classic find. But they're saying that find alone could replace pretty quickly 10 to 20% of English use petroleum needs and stuff. So there's a lot going on in the world of oil. And don't forget one thing here is that the vast majority of these sites around the world have not had fracking introduced to them. And if Iraq ever got online and got developed, who knows how much oil would be out there. But there's also, I think people probably have never even heard of this, there is frozen methane down at the bottom of the ocean, and an unbelievable amount of it. And they've talked about ways of bringing it up and using it, and that would be an extraordinary source of petroleum byproduct, methane, and oil and gas go together. And then you've got the entire Arctic region, which is just full of oil too. So I don't think we're not going to run out of oil if we ever do for hundreds of years. There's a book that I have, I think I mentioned it one time, that they're not even really sure where oil and gas come from. The classic position has been that it's, the byproduct of these swamp plants and rotting dinosaurs and stuff. And they're not sure, but if maybe it's a naturally occurring element down in deep in the earth. One of the theories is that there are a lot of microbes living deep in the earth in these hot temperatures and down there at extreme pressure. When they die, they get switched over into petroleum. So, and then that oozes up to the surface. They really don't know, believe it or not, they don't know for sure where all of this stuff comes from. All right. 6:32, it's Open Topic Friday, 523-1450, and I've got the text machine back, 805-6180, to text in, and we'll be right back. This is AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell, and we'll be right back. Kelly, here, mostly sunny today with a high of 80 in Las Cruces, 47 right now at KOB, although it's I think, 50 degrees right now. 50 degrees, and the low tonight's going to be about 58, but it's nice. I kept the screen door open last night, and it was just real pleasant. I mean, this is maybe the best time of the year. I don't know. It's certainly pleasant out there. And all right, so looking at a little bit more local and state news, we've got, of course, the issue of the immigration and illegal immigration is kind of at the top story, probably in this. As I'm looking at the news, this is the biggest thing that I see here. So I'm just going to play you a clip here from Pinal County, Florence, Arizona. A man arrested in Pinal County has been deported 20 times. This is one of the issues here. This is actually a clip of a guy. It's just going down the road with the police, so it's, I don't know. I don't think this is really something that would translate to the radio, but they have found that a 26-year-old Gennaro Cisneros Delgado being held on a $50,000 bond on suspicion of felony flight and endangerment. And they've got a picture of him being pulled over in some sort of a Jeep after he took the sheriffs on a 30-mile chase across Interstate 10 yesterday, going at times reaching speeds over 100 miles an hour. Now, you've got a situation here where in this video, I just saw where the police jumped out and the person, as soon as the police got out there, the guy takes off. But you've got people who are coming back repeatedly. What do you think should be done with those individuals? The backdrop of this, of course, is that you've got a lot of pressure from the top down to let these people be. Don't stop them. There's kind of contradictory law or contradictory statements from the president versus the laws on the books versus some of the local stuff. So you've got, for example, some incredible number of kids that are supposed to be coming over as the weather is improving. And it is something that anybody is going to tell you is going to take some getting used to if all of these kids stay here. And there's reports from across the United States where these communities have schools where 50% or more kids don't speak English. Now, how are these communities that were previously just English speaking places? How are these communities going to make it? How are they going to train these kids? A wave of 39,000 child migrants is going to be crossing the border. Now, there is some pushback on this stuff. California sheriff is defying Governor Brown's statement that all of the immigrants, all of the illegals can come to California and they don't need to worry about anything. It's kind of difficult economic times. For example, California is in the middle of this drought. They've got their hands full with crises. And I don't see, other than making some sort of a political statement, how this, you know, this is what I was talking about yesterday. Let's separate for a moment our ideology, our beliefs as attached to politics. Set those aside and just look at this from the perspective of problem solving. How does bringing these people in and letting them stay help America? And you might say, well, we're trying to make a better America. We're trying to make America more diverse. Diversity is our goal. Or we're trying to make America stronger by making sure that the worst jobs can be filled by somebody, or we're trying to create more justice in the world by bringing poor people that are being attacked and living in poverty and being attacked by gangs. I'm trying to think of the best case argument for this progressive idea that we've just got to open the borders and let anybody come in who wants to and stay here. There's been an extraordinary number of criminals that are allowed, have been allowed to come into the country and stay. So then the question there is, will they stop if they're, if they were criminals in their own country? I think the left, people on the left would say, well, that they did that because of economic need. Now that they're here, they're not going to have to do that because they're either going to find a job or they're going to be taken care of by the country. So you've got that. But the question is, will these criminals, some of them violent, they're rapists, they're murderers, they're in extremely violent gangs, are they going to stop being violent here? Then from a public policy, not a political, but a public policy. Public policy is the area, and I actually have a degree in public policy. I don't know if I've mentioned it before, but I have a master's in public policy. When you bring in policies, in theory, it's supposed to be beyond the political process in terms of ideology. You're supposed to be bringing in policies that help the community, that help the state, that help the country, the region. So how does bringing in criminals and letting them stay directly or indirectly help the community? If it doesn't, you can't justify it from a policy perspective. Once again, bringing in large numbers of people that are not trained in the history, the law, the culture, or even the language, how does that help the communities? And how long would... Is this supposed to be an endless immigration? Is it supposed to go on ad infinitum? Are people from across the world going to be shepherded over here? Are we supposed to bring in a couple of billion of foreign people? Will that make the country better? Will that help us achieve our goals? I guess it all depends on what your goal is. But if you brought in, let's just say you brought in billions of people, what the reductio ad absurdum, I think, is the what this is called. To take this idea to its logical extreme, what is the outcome going to be? And so let's say you got billions of people pushed into this country in the next, say, in the next 10 years. What will happen? The country will change into such a way that it'll kind of, by default, be a third world country. And so then the original purpose of America, whatever it was, to be a beacon of liberty, to have a place for religious freedom and capitalism, that would somewhat be extinguished. And what would take its place is just, this is another place to move around the globe. That's how I see it. Anyway, take a little break here. And it is 6:44. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell, and we'll be right back.
I can come to the phone, calling Elvis, you all know, well, tell my call.
It's Kelly here, and I was just thinking of a kind of an interesting argument kind of came up in my mind. There was something that happened with Rand Paul, and it was, and I think it was on one of these websites like the Federalist.com or whatever. And he was, well, anyway, let me just ask you this. First of all, what are the arguments for bringing illegals in and letting them stay? And the argument is, number one, these people are, they're destitute. They're downtrodden, they're oppressed, they're being abused by the powers that be or the gangs or whatever, and that they're people too, and that they deserve a chance to be brought in and trained and molded into being Americans, and by doing that will make the country a lot better. Now, couldn't you use that same basic argument against abortion? I mean, couldn't you make the same arguments that you're making for illegals? Couldn't you make those same ones for? I mean, why is abortion such a special right that it kind of blots out the rights or the theoretical rights, the actual rights of these children, these fetuses, whatever you want to call them? I mean, why not use that same argument? We've got a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
They kill it really quick.
I'll believe that when I see it. Go ahead.
What was this Debbie Wasserman Schultz saying about aborting 7-pound babies?
Third trimester abortions of 7, 8, 9-pound babies. Kentucky Rand Paul says Democrat National Committee Chairman Debbie Wasserman Schultz's recent comments on abortion should be interpreted to mean Democrats want to support the abortion of basically fully grown babies.
What is it here? Is it 23 weeks in New Mexico or what?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it's up to the last trimester, something like that. I think 20 weeks or something. I got to go back and look. I had looked at, I can't remember what the number is, but why can't you use the immigrant, the illegal? Why don't we at least give fetuses the rights of illegal immigrants? Mike, I got another call. Anything else? Thanks for the call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Patty Riley.
Patty, citizen journalist. What's up?
I was listening to Coach last night.
I can't hear you. Patty, I cannot hear you. Go ahead. Could you repeat that?
Yes. Richard C. Hoagland. He's been on several. Alex Jones. He was on Coast to Coast last night. I think everybody should pull that interview out. He was the first guest. He was talking about Elon Musk, Richard Branson, and another exploration science state. They have good ideas on water, okay, our water situation. They can get it from space. And we don't need oil anymore.
Wait.
We need to get over it. We need to get over this dinosaur paradigm we're in.
Mothership to Patty. Did you say we can get water from space?
Apparently they can extract some water.
Hello. Patty, I cannot hear you. Patty, call back. Something happened to Patty's phone. All right, so here's the question. Let's say you're the most bleeding heart person in history. Why can't you take the bleeding heart that you're applying to the illegal immigrants and apply it to fetuses? Aren't they in basically the same position? They're in a very... Yeah, they can't defend themselves. They're in a very precarious position. They don't know English. They don't know about U.S. history. They don't, you know. Let me take a little break here. Think about that for a moment, and we'll be right back. And 523-1450 to call in. Hey, mostly sunny today with a high of 80, Las Cruces low of 58. And we do have another call here. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly, my phone went dead there for a second.
Well, Mike, we always have to be ready to move on. So anyway, make your point, and let's. I got something else to say.
Well, what I think is with this New World Order thing, their whole agenda is to bring utter destruction of all national identity and national pride. And it's all part of this multiculturalism.
Yeah.
And their primary consideration is the conception of a one-world government. And you can't have a national identity anymore if you want a one-world government. It just doesn't.
Mike,
it's like oil and water.
Mike, where do you get your information from so people can study this?
Well, I was reading something by Brzezinski the other day,
uh-huh.
And it was the ability to control each and every person through means of mind control. And part of it is the, you know, this end to industrialization.
Wait a minute, Mike. The Brzezinski was saying that there's mind control out there and we're going to use it to control the people?
He's got something he calls technotronics,
huh.
And it's which would create human-like robots. In a system of terror, and this is what that guy from Apple, what's his name, Wozniak?
Yeah.
Was talking about and how they fear the rise of the robots, you know, and technotronics. And it's all part of
amazing.
An end to industrialization.
An end to industrialization?
which they're doing right now, it's the post-industrial zero-growth society.
Well, it sounds
it'll put an end to the production of nuclear-generated electric power.
Allow me a word. It sounds like if they're going to be turning everybody into a robot, that they're
West
going...
Westworld, Kelly.
I'm sorry, Mike. What did? Don't let me interrupt you when you're calling in, by the way. What did you say?
Remember that movie Westworld?
Yeah. Yes, I do remember the movie. Mike, what's your point on the Westworld?
Well, it's coming to fruition.
Fantastic. We're pretty much out of time, Mike. Thanks for the call. Thanks, Mike. Please try to fit into the format. All right. So here is Technotronics. Talk about it. The goal of the super elites, it is true, there's been a lot of talk about this out there, is to make people live for 500 years or more, and they're going to do that by replacing body parts with electronic parts or technological parts. And there is a lot of fear now about these robots. And anyway, here is... you can laugh about it, or you can say that Mike is overdoing it or whatever. But I mean, the fact of the matter is, there's this stuff is out there. It's not coming out of the, it's not just coming out of these sci-fi movies or whatever. It's coming out of the minds of some of these people. There is a desire. It's led by Ray Kurzweil to make people live forever, and how they would do that is by replacing body parts and then getting you would replace everything. They're trying to do a head transplant, or what they're calling a full body transplant, which is actually a head transplant, to this guy who's dying of this wasting disease. And anyway, since Mike mentioned it, Technotronic, pump up the jam. I'll take you out with that. Kelly O'Connell Show, and we'll be back after the break on the hour.
It up while your feet are stumping, and the jam is pumping. Look ahead, the crowd is jumping. Pump it up a little more, get the party going on the dance floor. See, cause that's where the party's at, and you find out if you do that.
It's Kelly here. Good morning. And it is mostly sunny today with a high of 80, low of 58, about 50 degrees right now. And we immediately have a call. Thank you very much for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Patty Riley again.
Yes. Hey, what's up?
Okay. Hey. If you don't want to know, everybody's really one-sided on this. And don't give Mike a hard time.
I
know three people that want to kill themselves right now because they don't understand this. At least he's researching.
Patty, please do not just call up and just start in the middle of a conversation.
Well, you know what? You cut me off the last time, Kelly, because I have something to say.
Patty, nobody could hear you. Something happened to your phone. I said that on the air. I heard a whisper. Nobody could hear it. I couldn't understand what you were saying. I hung up and I said, you can call back. If there's something that happens to your phone, that's not my fault. Nobody wants to listen to dead air.
I get cut off quite a bit. Anyway, I guess I don't have anything to say.
Okay, thank you. Have a good day. Please try to be polite, folks. If something happens to your phone, if your phone malfunctions and we can't hear you, we're going to move on. All right, so I've got this. With all due respect, okay, I've got a little interview with Ray Kurzweil here about living forever, November 18th, 2013. Ray Kurzweil is the guy that invented the reading machine. Looks like Patty is calling back to chastise me and tell me she's never going to call again. But anyway, here we go. Ray Kurzweil interview, November 18th, 2013, living forever. This is the movement of the intellectuals. And there's a certain percentage of people who think that technology, since Mike brought this up, there's a movement out there. People think they're going to live forever through technology. Even your emotions and your memories will be somehow, they'll learn how to capture all this stuff and keep it into a some sort of a hard drive, I guess. As your body parts wear out, they'll be replaced by mechanical parts that are even better. So check out this brief interview with Ray Kurzweil. He made a reading machine. He's got a background in computers. He made a reading machine and sold it to, for blind people, he sold it to the guy, I'm trying to remember the guy's name. He's a R&B artist, to Stevie Wonder. They were having a conversation while he was showing him this machine, and Stevie Wonder said, too bad you can't do the same thing for electronic keyboards. Ray Kurzweil then turned around and created the first authentic sounding with a real piano, digital piano sound, piano keyboard. I have one. I own one of those. Here it goes. Discussing living forever and his strategies for achieving a radical life.
Well, people sometimes say, well, Ray, taking these supplements and other things you do with your lifestyle, that's going to enable you to live hundreds of years? And the answer is no. That whole program that I follow now is Bridge One. And the goal of Bridge One is only to get to Bridge Two. Bridge Two is the sort of maturation, full flowering of the biotechnology revolution, where we can literally reprogram this outdated software that runs in our bodies. And it's not a metaphor. I mean, our genes are literally little software programs, and they evolved thousands of years ago when there was not any interest of the human race as a species for people to live very long, because there's limited food and resources. And once you're done raising your kids and you're maybe 30, biological evolution didn't care about you anymore. We'll see dramatic changes in health and medicine 10 years from now. We'll see radical changes 20 years from now. We need to get to that point. So I'm 65 on many biological aging tests. I come out a lot younger. I expect to be in my 40s 15 years from now when we get to Bridge 2. People say, gee, you know, you're going to live another 100 years. You have to take in consideration that it's not like nothing is going to happen in those 100 years. So the more time goes by, the more life extension technologies we have. And the key tipping point is when the rate of technological progress, which is getting faster and faster, is so fast that it outpaces the time going by. So we add more than a year to your remaining life expectancy every year. And that tipping point is 10 to 15 years away, in my opinion. We're really very close to it because of the progress we're making with biotechnology. My books are really a wake-up call for my contemporaries, my baby boomer peers. My kid.
All right, so earlier, what do you think year, about living stories forever? Now, here is something that we should probably keep in mind is that, you know, if you're talking about immortality, all right, people on the left especially, but a lot of people out there are worried about the resources. Now, one of the ways that we can live with, what is it, 7 billion people now, 6 billion, 7 billion people, is that people die. People die. Those people stop using stuff. They stop using water and power and food, all these other things, energy. They die. Somebody takes their place. What is going to happen if you have an elite group of people, which could be tens of millions, hundreds of millions of people, who don't die? I mean, what aren't these environmentalists worried about this? All right, here's a little bit more from Ray Kurzweil on immortality.
At a conference run by the futuristic California think tank Singularity University. The stories were about high tech's prodigious promise for the future, dirt cheap energy, sky high crop yields, labor free machinery. Tonight comes the kicker. Far longer, far healthier, conceivably even eternal life. Why would immortality be an economics rather than a science story? Because the basic aim of economics is to maximize well-being, the greatest good for the greatest number. And a longer, healthier life is the most unambiguous good there is, says Singularity's co-founder Ray Kurzweil. Skeptics notwithstanding.
You know, people say, oh, I don't want to live past 100. And I say, yeah, okay, I'd like to hear you say that when you're 100.
Assuming they'll be hale and hearty at 100, which Kurzweil emphatically does. In fact, he firmly believes that at age 100, he'll just be getting started.
I think I have a very good chance of making it through. But when you say making it through, you mean essentially live forever. Indefinitely. I mean, I can never talk to you and say, I've done it. I've lived forever. But the goal is to put that decision in our own hands rather than the metaphorical hands of fate.
Now, before you diss Ray Kurzweil's prediction that death will become an elective procedure, note that he's known for being ahead of the curve. This footage comes from the film about him, Transcendent Man.
My name is Raymond Kurzweil, and I'm from Queens, New York.
While still in high school, he was invited on TV's I've Got a Secret to show off the computer he'd programmed to compose music in the style of classical composers.
Raymond, how old are you?
I'm 17.
Your parents know what you've been up to?
In his 20s, he invented a reading machine for the blind.
They've invented a machine that can make any book talk.
For sure, and 70 years ago.
His first customer was Stevie Wonder.
Obviously, it was a life changer.
Starting a lifelong friendship that led to the development of Kurzweil's second major invention, a musical synthesizer that sounded like real instruments.
Can you all hear that bass drum, man?
In short, a string of breakthroughs that boggle the human brain when you think of how primitive computer brains were back then. But computers had been getting more powerful fast, which got Kurzweil thinking ahead.
1981, I noticed this remarkable exponential curve, which was very smooth, and I extended that curve out to 2050. Now we're in 2012. It's 30 years later, and we're very much on that curve.
What Kurzweil had noticed, as illustrated in the Transcendent Man documentary, was that all information technologies progress exponentially, doubling in performance while decreasing in size and price. Double every year, 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, and so forth. And in just 3 decades, you've topped 1 billion.
This is several billion times more powerful per dollar than the computer I used when I was a student. It's 100,000 times smaller. We can create computers twice as powerful as they are today next year because we're using today's computers to create them.
While Kurzweil's brain is nothing to sneeze at, he thinks even he won't be able to compete with tomorrow's computers.
Artificial intelligence will reach human levels by around 2029. Follow that out further to, say, 2045, we will have multiplied the intelligence, the human biological machine intelligence of our civilization a billionfold.
A billionfold from today?
Right. That's such a singular change that we borrow this metaphor from physics and call it a singularity. You know, a profound disruptive change in human history.
All right, so we've got Ray Kurzweil here claiming that by 2045, we're going to be able to live forever. Now, as you can tell, Ray Kurzweil, or maybe you can't tell, but I'll fill you in on this. Ray Kurzweil is a humanist. He doesn't, you know, waste his time wondering about God and being saved from what I've heard from him. Instead, he is trying to figure out how to save himself forever. So one of the things that he's been criticized about is his idea that the brain is kind of like a computer. And so if it's like a computer, we can save all of the memories, all the emotions, all of the thoughts of the human brain. We will somehow be able to tap into that and save them on some sort of a memory piece. And then we will be able to put this into a computer of some kind that will actually preserve our emotions and what it feels like to be a human being so that the experience will not be degraded. It will be enhanced. So, well, what do you think about that? And then there's this connection to robots, which Mike had brought up, this we're living in a time where robot technology is moving at warp speed. Pardon the Star Trek pun there, but moving at warp speed. But there's a real concern that robots are getting to the point where they can learn on their own. You can program learning into their own, and then you've got kind of a Blade Runner scenario. What if a robot learns how to be evil, learns how to kill? And then you think about the three laws of robotics that were put out there, one of which a robot should never harm a human being, but we're getting ready to use them in war. All right, let's take a little break here. 523-1450 and 805-61805. And it is AM Las Cruces 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell, and it's 719. We'll be right back.
There's got to be a record of you someplace. You got to be on somebody's books. The lowdown picture of your face.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Hey, Kelly, it's Tom. I didn't want to come back on your program, but I wanted to ask you.
Yeah.
You have access to a computer.
Yeah.
I know Hillary's contributions are listed, have to be, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't. Yeah. Who knows? I mean, they're supposed to be, but there is a season when this stuff has to be published. I don't think they're put up day by day.
Maybe. Well, I did hear in the news, like I said, that company, the Chinese Communist Company in New Jersey and the Hezbollah leader. So if you could, you know, check, see what you can find. Maybe you can read them over the air.
Okay. Well, I'll see what I can do. Thanks, Tom. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, Kelly here, and of course, and it's it's over 50 degrees out there right now. It's warming up, and tonight will be pretty warm still. I think 58, but the high today is going to be over 80. Now, here's just a little bit on robots, the dawn of killer robots.
There are basically two things which go in parallel as society evolves, right? There is the power of our technology, and then there is the wisdom of us humans for how to manage the technology.
Robot power!
If technology grows faster than the wisdom, it's kind of like going into kindergarten and giving them a bunch of hand grenades to play with.
The robots are here. Some of them look a lot like us. Others, not so much. But robots are getting more mobile and smarter by the day, thanks to the U.S. military funding research and development in advanced robots and artificial intelligence. Some people are excited about our evolving relationship with the machine.
They're a great tool that humans can use to make their lives better and make the world a safer place.
While others are deeply concerned about the dawn of intelligent killer robots.
There is nothing that the U.S. developed in the military sphere that it does not want to weaponize.
All right, so just a little introduction there. Here is from, this is the Discovery Channel, a little bit on building real-life Terminators. And it shows, this shows a robot that looks like, well, it's got feet, it's stamping up and down, it's grabbing bricks and taking them and tossing them, and with a great deal of force. And it's also got what looks like saddlebags, which must be... So you've got these, anyway, you've got the dawn of... now. I don't hear any dialogue on this, but you've got the dawn of could be an extremely dangerous age of robots in which they do everything that we were afraid that atom bombs did, which would be to, and they've got a picture of this little tiny robot that's crawling into a cave. And these are very ingeniously put together things, but the fact of the matter is that if we had no laws on these things, if we didn't carefully watch the technology and such, that these robots, I mean, can you imagine self-replicating robots? I know this sounds ridiculous. I'm only bringing it up because it's open topic Friday, and Mike was talking about it, but there is an actual danger that if you designed a robot, and they're already able to do this, able to design robots that can teach themselves from their environment. You put in a program to do that, and you're able to, they're able to possibly even self-replicate, that the stuff out of sci-fi movies would come true. And then, you know, what happens then is total chaos. Let me queue up. Let me get this thing queued up here. Let me take another break here real quick. But you heard Ray Kurzweil talking about immortality. But what we're talking about on that is transhumanism. The parts of the body can be replaced increasingly by technology, not by human organ transplants, but by super sophisticated replacement parts. In addition to that, they have talked about putting implants into your brain that would be so powerful that you would never forget anything. And so you'd have total recall. You'd have total knowledge of your whole life. And then updating healthcare in such a way, like Ray Kurzweil says, I'm 65, but I look like I'm 40. For the sake of the record, he does look 65. But getting to the point, according to Ray Kurzweil, and there's some extreme criticism of this guy, but transhumanism, getting people to the point where they don't have to die, your consciousness, your memory, you, your personality, your opinions, all of the stuff that makes you unique is put into a computer. According to Ray Kurzweil, the brain is a sophisticated kind of computer, and then it lives on in there, and so you become immortal. And what if you could make Shakespeare immortal, or Albert Einstein, or Mother Teresa, or the Paul the Apostle? What if you could make those people live forever? Wouldn't that radically benefit humanity? On the other hand, what about if Stalin or Hitler gained immortality? Okay, let me cue this thing up, and we'll be back in just a second. Kelly O'Connell, it's Sam Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, and 727, we'll be back in just a moment.
Orange, the sacred and profane, pleasure and the pain.
Bud and burgers, magical combination.
I should be stronger for the game. I like when you touch me in this way.
Yeah.
Please, caress me again.
Tell me a sentence.
Domino's Pizza to Domino's, because we're more than pizza. Try their specialty chicken, pastas, sandwiches, or stuffed cheesy bread. Choose any two, including medium and two topping pizzas for just $5.99 each.
It's Kelly here, 731. It's going to be mostly sunny today. It's going to have a high of 80, low of 58, about 50 degrees right now, maybe a little bit more. And we want to thank, speaking of building stuff, Rawson's Builders Supply for sponsoring the show. And also Ben Rawson for his Rawson Report. All right, so Open topic Friday comes in the topic of the dangers of machines. So we covered a little bit Ray Kurzweil's desire to live forever, the guy that invented the reading machine and the electronic keyboard with real sampled sound. And now I've just looked it up. There are all kinds of stories out there right now about robots, and also including protests. Anti-robot rally that was it's somewhat interesting scenario here. Let's see if I can get a little clip of this. Just a picture of this robot. Stop the robots. Humans are the future. And this is about the morality of the Adam Mason 23. So if I say robot, you say robot. The chant reverberated through the air near the entrance to the SXSW Tech and Entertainment Festival in Austin. So there are people out there who are afraid of robots. Tesla founder Elon Musk donated $10 million to the Future of Life Institute, which is these people right here that are protesting because of his fears. Elon Musk, who's obviously a very bright guy, is concerned about the rise of the robots, if you want to put it in that. And there's been obviously many, many stories, science fiction stories that have been put together or written movies put out there talking about the dangers. It's very easy to imagine a future where that we are menaced by robots. But here's a couple of things from Elon Musk, one of which saying that you have no idea how close these dangerous robots are. He posted a comment on futurology site edge.org warning readers that the development in artificial intelligence, which is the area that we're talking about an automatic vacuum cleaner. We're talking about a robot that has a sense of itself, has a sense of environment, can think, maybe not in a human way, but has an ability to interact with the environment and decision make. And there's a story here in the New Scientist. Humanoid robot has a sense of self. Let me play a little bit of that for you.
Not bad.
This is the robot voice. It's playing a game with a human being. It can express six emotions on its face and through speech. 523-1450 if you want to change the topic, but might as well get into it. So this robot that they've been building isn't just in there. There's other pictures of robots with human faces, and they are startlingly realistic looking. There's one of that looks like a black woman in here that is on the front. You think you're looking at a human being, and this is from IndianExpress.com. Meet the futuristic robot that mimics humans. Looks like an African American or a black person on the front face. On the back face, it's got its brain or its computer components exposed, and it looks like something out of like Mike says, Westworld or some of these other, well, the Terminator, you know, when he gets his face, part of his face blown off. Bina 48, the robot who can tell jokes, recite poetry, and mimic humans. One of the most sophisticated robots ever built, capable of independent thought and emotion. Bina 48 is modeled on Bina Aspen, wife of Martine Rothblatt, the CEO of biotech outfit United Therapeutics. All right, so I'm not saying that it's around the corner that we're going to run into a robot and not tell it it's not a human, but a book has come out, the dailybeast.com article, Will You Be Murdered by a Robot? The Future of Violence, Robots and Germs, Hackers and Drones. And this is a book written by Benjamin Vitte and Gabriella Bloom. By combining the elements of the subtitle in sinister ways. Well, you can gather that idea that we're on the verge of an extraordinary explosion, as Ray Kurzweil was showing these graphs that go straight up in learning. And there, I can't remember the name of the law, but there's a law in technology that says every 18 months, the power of a technology doubles, and the cost falls in half. And so that's what we're dealing with here. Now, what if we did develop, I know, you know, most people out there, whether you're a humanist or especially Christians, would probably have very strong feelings about you can't recreate the soul. Of course, I tend to agree with that, but what if they're able to make a computer that thinks, in some sense, is able to deduce, draw conclusions, decision make, learn, that it has a personality that grows, that it does have a certain kind of sense of humor? Okay, all of this stuff would have to be put into it. It wouldn't grow naturally. It'd have to be... you know, it would have to be some sort of a program, obviously, an app. Elon Musk is not just sitting back and taking this in. The guy that started the car company, the famous electronic car company, with the very finest electric cars that we've ever seen, he warns readers that at this edge.org site that artificial intelligence could bring about robots that may autonomously decide that it is sensible to start killing humans. He says, quote, the risk of something seriously dangerous happening is in the 5 years time frame. And we do have a phone call here. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Not a good idea, Kelly. Oh,
what?
This business of robots and, you know, forever extended life. You can't have both, or you shouldn't even have either one.
This
you take the robots.
This is the dream of the elites, though. The people, think about it. You're a super successful, say you're a billionaire. You've made it the hard way. Nobody gave you anything. You're an absolute genius. You're great at reading people and business opportunities. and you're just getting started, you're in your 60s and 70s, why check out? Why retire? Why not try to live forever?
Because it's not a natural function of life. You're fighting against the tide. That's not the normal scheme of things. And this has nothing to do with God or anything. It's just the natural circumstances of nature. Everything has a season. I'm getting almost poetic here. This is Friday, and here I am poetic almost. This is great, right?
Exactly.
Anyway.
Well, I mean, so let me ask you this. I mean, certainly people who believe in evolution could say we've evolved to the point where we can force evolution. Why not do that?
Because there's too many unintended consequences. And I'll tell you what the whole thing is. The human being, as the only species on this planet, is scared to death of death. They can't comprehend death. They can't stand it. They cannot, see themselves dying. Now, there are some people, like you were saying, here I am, I'm loving this life, the life of like that Wallace or the Duke and Duchess of Windsor, wanted to live forever because they were so much in love. Or you like you were saying, you've got a great business mind and you're so wrapped up in that business mind, you want to let it go on and on and on and on. It's still not a natural function.
What about Isaac Newton? What about Albert Einstein? People who can radically impact human good for centuries.
Again, there's always somebody that's going to come up and replace that brilliance of the Newton or an Einstein. And then there's a larger circumstance here, right? Let's say you did that. You improved life. Look what we've got now. You already have an overpopulation. Not only that, you've got an overpopulation of people that, don't have anything to do. So what are you going to do about that then? Now you've got even more people with less work, meaning if you use the robots in there, and people sitting around with twiddling their thumbs, like what's the old thing that you the devil's hands are an idle workshop or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay. So let me ask you this: what would keep people who were living forever and were super powerful politically or through wealth? What would keep them from living forever? And they would, by definition, they would have to restrict new human beings from being born.
Well, that's true. I mean, you can't have just people, wall-to-wall people all over the place. You can't do that. And if you did have a group or a set of people that were to be able to live and live and live and live and live, then there's going to be this discrimination factor. Say somebody says, well, I don't have the money, I don't have the resources to live forever, but you do, so there's... The people cannot adjust to that either. There's a fairness issue involved there.
I'm sorry, I was queuing up something from Elon Musk, but no, I hear you. So do you think it would be immoral to have people live forever?
Yes. I'm going to say that, yes. It's just the way it is. This is a function of life. This is existentialism or something, whatever the term I'm looking for here. But the point is there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. And that's just the way it is.
All right, let me ask you another thing.
Let
me ask you something that's related. How about killer robots? We know that for decades that the military has used killer robots or has been designing them. In addition, we know that private individuals are flying these drones around that can go to your house and look in and watch you and dress or whatever else they're doing. We know that not only is the military making violent robots, but maybe private citizens are too. Should there be a law just banning violent robots or a law that keeps robots that can learn and possibly could learn to kill from being created?
Yes, in both instances. I disagree with having robots fight wars. Wars are inherently horrible, destructive, and the most vicious thing that you can ever think about. To try to make war, any kind of war, palatable and acceptable by using non-humans, I disagree with that. If you want to have a war, you get out there, you get your head blown up, and everybody sees how horrible it is, and that sooner or later, these stupid humans out there are going to realize that war is not the answer. Wait, look at that.
Well, I mean, I guess war is the answer if you're getting attacked by another country.
But there's always, well, of course, this is again with the stupidity of the human thinking. You know, I told you before, there's only three functions that the human needs to exist cohesively in this world: intellect, logic, and honor. You need nothing else. Nothing. That's all you need.
All right,
think
Frankie,
about that
Frankie,
for a minute.
Frankie, now, if you're on the left, let's just say, or you're maybe you don't have a political orientation, but you're a humanist of some kind. You don't believe in God. You don't believe in a life hereafter. Don't you almost, aren't you going to, if you have the wealth to do it, pursue immortality because there is nothing else? And why not? I mean, you know, why wouldn't you want to live forever? I mean, there's no heaven, there's no hell. You're just not going to exist anymore. And you enjoy existing. You enjoy the pleasure of the moment and your memories. And why not?
No, I disagree again. All things end. Even this world eventually is going to end. It's a simple fact. That's it. Now, myself personally, I am a humanist. I am, an atheist, if you want to put it that way. But the point being, I would be incredibly excited, right, to find out what is at the other end of life. Nobody knows that. Nobody knows that. Nobody's ever come back, okay? So what is at the other end of life? I think that would be the greatest trip, journey, challenge for any human of thought, you know, because we're the only species that knows we're going to die. So that would, in my estimation, would be more exciting than to live forever.
What's exciting,
that's
though? What's exciting? To not exist anymore?
Well, no, like I say, you move on to a different parallel,
all right,
a different
then we
dimension.
Do, all right, okay, then you're saying you're a humanist, there's no God, but we do continue. We do continue,
yes,
on. Okay, so, I mean, how do you know? By the way, how do you know that?
Because this is a scientific aspect here. You know, you as a human or an entity, a biological, chemical, electrical entity.
That's very kind of you to say, by the way.
What?
And that's very
what?
Kind of you to say, by the way.
Oh, well, the point is you exist. You have an energy. You know, a pulse, a force. Right?
All
right. You cannot destroy electricity. You can only change.
All right. Okay. E equals MC squared. Energy cannot be destroyed or created. It can only be transferred.
Exactly. So because you now as small as it is, it's still a level of energy, right? So when you die, if you want to put it in a sense of a religious aspect, you have a soul. That little piece of energy is your soul. That's what floats off. If you want to try to paint it as a paint, that's what floats off.
There is
off
a soul.
Heaven.
There's
is
no God. Frankie, there's a soul, but there's no God. Isn't that a miracle?
There is no God. Nobody knows that. There is no one individual that put this together. The big unanswered question, and that's another reason why it would be exciting to die, is to find out how this all did happen. In my mind, there is not just some guy sitting up in some house on some throne, you know, and then saying, you know, I decide I'm going to make a world, or I'm going to make an earth, and I'm going to make Adam and Eve.
Why not?
It's so hokey pokey.
Wait a second. Hold on a second. There are hundreds and hundreds of coincidental facts about our particular solar system that if you changed one of them, life would be extinguished, but that's all an accident. You know what the chances of that are? Beyond the trillions to one.
No. I know what you're saying. If we were to tilt our axis a few more degrees or move out another 100 or so kilometers away from something, that we wouldn't exist. I mean, that's just innate. There's other
stuff. That's a fact. What I'm talking about, you like to mention facts. That is a fact that you don't have an answer for. You can't just dismiss it. There have been books written about this. That's what they call the Goldilocks universe. There are literally hundreds and hundreds of various factual elements of this place that we're living, that if you changed one or two of them, life could not live anymore. But it's, according to you, it's a coincidence. Why do you think they came up with the multiverse? They came up with the multiverse to explain the incredibly unlikely fact of this happening accidentally. So they have to have an infinite number of universes out there for it to accidentally happen in.
That's right. There are other parallel universes that are mirror ours. Maybe not exactly 100%, but they have the
That's
same
not what
mix.
I said.
You know,
there are. Anyway, listen, I got to take a break. We got some ads. Anything else?
No, that That's it. Listen, you have a nice Friday. And whatever happened to your email account, I send
all
you
right,
stuff.
Okay, I'll dig it up. I'll dig it up. I was just about to call a priest and have it buried, but I'll dig it up.
Okay, way to go, man.
All right,
we'll see you. Huh?
Thanks
take
a lot,
care.
Frankie. Have a great day. Okay, bye-bye. All right, folks. Frankie, who does not have any belief in, I guess, God or anything, says it would be immoral to try to live forever. So maybe it would be. What do I know? Here we go. Take a little break here, 7:50. Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. Be right back.
I think demographics is a real issue where people are not having kids in a lot of countries. And, you know, very often they'll solve it with immigration. Immigration from where? If Europe has an average of many.
Musk may be a driving force behind super intelligence.
I mean, I'm quite worried about artificial superintelligence these days. I think, and I've said this publicly, I think it's maybe something more dangerous than nuclear weapons. So.
I think demographics is a real issue where people are not having kids in a lot of countries. And, you know, very often they'll solve it with immigration. Immigration from where? If Europe has an average, or many parts of Europe have an average of a 50 or 60.
Okay, folks, going to wind up here with just a couple of things. Here is a little bit from Elon Musk, who's the does Tesla cars. Artificial intelligence could treat humans like Labradors. Check this out. This is talking to Neil deGrasse Tyson. And then I'm going to try to find something on the Goldilocks universe.
I mean, I'm quite worried about artificial superintelligence these days. I think, and I've said this publicly, I think it's maybe something more dangerous than nuclear weapons. So we should be really careful about that. If there was a very deep super digital superintelligence that was created that could go into rapid recursive self-improvement in a non-logarithmic way, then, you know, that would...
And it's self-learning.
Yes. So, like, it just could reprogram itself to be smarter and iterate very quickly and do that 24 hours a day on millions of computers. Well,
that's all she wrote.
That's all she wrote.
Okay.
I mean, we will be like a pet Labrador if we're lucky. I have a pet Labrador, by the way.
We'll be their pets.
It's like the friendliest creature.
But, no, they'll domesticate us. So
yes,
that we will be
exactly
lap pets to them.
Yes. I mean, or something
right,
strange
so
is going to happen.
They're joking about it, but Elon Musk is saying if these people who are creating this stuff, these computers, are able to if they're able to make a computer or a robot that can teach itself, and then it develops a violent streak for whatever reason, then what are you going to do? If you saw the chart of how much technology is improving, you'd be astounded. It's going straight up, and this is not just sci-fi anymore. And if Elon Musk is giving $10 million to fight against it, I think it means something. Here's Paul Davies, a guy that I have a bunch of his books, Why a Fine-Tuned Universe. Check this out.
Paul, does the postulation of a multiverse and the Anthropic principle to select from it because we're here, does that eliminate the possibility of a supernatural being, a god?
Part of the motivation for introducing the multiverse explanation for the biological fine-tuning of the universe was to finally get rid of God, because the explanation that the universe is so fit for life because God made it that way just appeared anathema to many scientists, certainly many cosmologists. But I have to say, that I know religious scientists who are very comfortable with the idea of a multiverse and a God. I mean, they say that, well, if you've got this God who is all-powerful, then why can this God not make an infinite number of universes? Doesn't have to limit it to this one. So I don't think you could ever really use it to prove that God does not exist. But I think probably it undermines the argument that many people have, which they used to apply to the biological realm, that the universe looks sort of too good to just be an accident, and therefore we need God to explain it. Now, I think Darwin did a great job in eliminating the need for God in designing the species. In the same way, I think the multiverse does cut the ground from under those who would say, the universe is put together in such an ingenious and clever way, there must be a being who has done it. Because if you've got all possibilities, well, sure, you could have a being that decides to make all possible universes, but you know,
it's a little wasteful.
It's a long way away from the sort of traditional God, and so I think it, you know, does have that effect. Although logically, it's not getting rid of the supernatural dimension, if you like, takes away a lot of the shine from it, I think. But other people probably don't feel that way.
You've though had some work kind of undermining the multiverse itself by showing some of the consequences of it.
Right. One of the things I've tried to do is to get away from using this word God, because it means so many different things to so many people. What I think is a more helpful thing to focus on is not is there a God that explains the universe, but does the universe have a meaning or a purpose? I used to use that word design, but I'm very scared of doing that these days. But I would certainly say that the universe appears as if it's got a meaning or a purpose. A better word I have is that the universe seems to be about something. Indeed, you can't be a scientist unless you suppose that there is a coherent scheme of things, and that when we do our science, when we get to the next layer of reality, we sort of uncover what's coming next. We expect to find order and rationality. We don't expect it all to fall apart if we go to the next level. So science is that there is a coherent scheme of things.